We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Got another dude!
Better than this. Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy, Bronco Nagurski Award, Ultimate Dudes.
Got another dude!
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house!
Welcome back to Lot of Dudes, Season 1, Episode 2, presented by 4th and Dude. We have a loaded episode for you today as the Eagles are flying high coming off a big road win versus the Northern Illinois Huskies last Friday night. We'll spend the first half of the podcast recapping the W and taking inventory of all the bad takes and misinformation we gave you last week, and spend the second half of the episode getting you ready for Wake Forest. Dude or Pood is back by popular demand along with the rest of our segments. I'll tell you what, my memory of the game is a little hazy. You had kind of a perfect storm of, you had the early Labor Day dismissal, you had the 9:30 start time. I had some pregame nerves that were helped out by alcohol a little bit, combined with the open bar. So, Matt, why don't you take this one away?
Yeah, that's a real tough guy comment from you there, but I guess I appreciate it. Two ads before we get started. Similar to last week, this week's episode is brought to you by 4th and Dude, 4thanddude.blogspot.com. Definitely want to get those page views up. Our studio is not going to pay for itself. Also brought to you by Bus Productions, a little bit of a throwback. Small company founded out of Birmingham, Alabama, also known as the managers to rap superstar Taib Ali. And they sell T-shirts too, so busproductions.com. Check them out.
And thank you
for their support.
Building off a lot of momentum from last episode, we got a lot of pretty goods, which is certainly exciting. A lot of people said you say a lot. So we're going to try to cut down on that, but no promises because it's
no promises.
Subconscious things. So there it is. We'll see what happens
with
that.
All right.
Yeah, so why don't you take it away from here?
Let's just jump into that. So, again, we start every episode with scenes from last week just to kind of recap what happened over the past week and where we are today. So, like Matt mentioned, it was a 23-20 nail-biter win, but a win is a win, and we are undefeated 1-0 for the first time in at least a few years. Daz gave us this great quote in the press conference afterwards. The great thing about being 1-0 is you have the chance to go 2-0, which I think is just spot on. That's the kind of the mindset we have. We are on the road to 10-2, but we're not going to worry about all 10 wins at once. We're just going to take it one game at a time. I think the recap that I want to touch on is the Dewey's Pub recap, which is where the official New York City alumni game watch was. Let me just say it was a huge hit. I had an awesome time. I think everyone had an awesome time. No tables were available 45 minutes before kickoff. Great atmosphere all night. They clearly went all out. They had, you know, jerseys all over the wall and all the good stuff, and it definitely showed. Any comments from you there on how Dewey's went?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the parts I remember were phenomenal. There was beer pong
being
played.
That was cool.
I want everyone to know that I had a lot of alcohol prior to and during. But tell you what, the highlight of the night for me was Kayla from The Bachelor being there.
Sure was.
I'll tell you what, where was she from? Juan Pablo season? I don't remember.
No, not Juan Pablo.
Ben? I don't, one of those.
No, it was later. It was a later. I mean, it was Boring Ben. I think it was Boring Ben.
It might have been Juan Pablo. She made the top three. Oh, it was Ben.
It was not Juan Pablo.
All right. Well, anyway, she looked great.
Anyways.
That's a big get for Dewey, so good for them. Tell you what, when we walked in there, it felt like everyone kind of knew who we were. Everyone was, you know, had been.
Who was looking? People were talking.
They were like, "That's 4th and Dude. Those are the Lot of Dude guys." So that's huge there. What was that, Matt?
Oh, just a cold one. Thanks for noticing. Want to give a quick shout out.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
On the Dewey's Pub to the Courtyard Marriott for their Wi-Fi. That allowed us to tweet. The service wasn't great in Dewey's, so the Wi-Fi allowed us to tweet, gained about 10 followers. Speaking of followers, fourthanddude@twitter.com. We have a couple qualms with some of you listeners out there, potential listeners out there. Had a lot of good tweet interactions, but not 100% follow rate from those interactions. So that's something that we're going to follow up with everyone individually on. But just shout out to the Wi-Fi.
The Twitter handle got a little out of hand for me, at least. It's very difficult, and a lot of respect to people that can do this, but it's very difficult to live tweet and also focus on the game and also make sure that you have sufficient beverages.
I'm going to stop you there because that's a little bit of a spoiler alert for something coming up later in the show. So why don't we keep rolling on to the actual football here?
Oh, do you want to talk about the quarterback that started?
Matt?
It was your breakout dude of the year, right? So why don't you take this one?
Yeah, I'll take this one. I think, you're giving yourself too much credit, as I think we both put all of our eggs in the Wade basket. You had a post about it. He was my breakout dude of the week. I think we both thought he was an absolute lock to start. And sure enough, 30 minutes before game time, we see the tweet from the field saying that Brown's taking the refs at the one. So we felt pretty stupid. And honestly, it's a tough start for our podcast and blog career to be so wrong on our first, bold prediction. But, hey, no news is bad news. And maybe we can get our name out there by being the blog that is, 100% wrong about everything important regarding UC football.
We were so wrong about everything. And it's funny, in hindsight, it was almost obvious that it was going to be Brown. Between Adazio, he treats Wade like he's the redheaded stepchild, never talks about him in press conferences. He's always been very high on Brown. I did a little investigative journalism. I looked at Wade's Twitter feed. He was pretty quiet after August 24th, after he'd been pretty vocal, up to that point. So once we started hearing the rumors that it was going to be Brown, It was obvious, and we should have been there, and we, hand off, that's on us, apologize for that. But tell you what, Brown got off to good start. Could have been a good start. He had his first pass of his BC career, hit Mike Walker, 40-yard pass would have been, hit him right in the hands. I'll give Mike a pass for that. He had a good game otherwise, but man, that got me going right there.
Yeah, and I think honestly, I was saying this at the time, but if that ball is complete, it was a great play by the NIU defender. I don't think it was any fault of Walker, to be honest, but if that's complete, think about how much differently we feel about...
We won by 30.
Not only Brown's game, and how the game goes itself. That was humongous, and I think, starting any drive off with your rookie quarterback connecting on a 40-yard pass, that just changes the mindset of the team, changes the mindset of the fans, whatever, so... I think that was disappointing, but if you take a step back and actually look at, the performance overall, he finished 26 for 42, 62% for 191 yards. Last year, Tolles, our friend of the program, only had a higher completion percentage twice. That was against Georgia Tech and UConn, but he never threw more than 34 times, which I think is, and we'll touch on it in a bit, but Daz definitely let the reins off the offense a little bit here, which was exciting to watch. He had that one pick that I didn't think was, a horrible mistake. He definitely forced it a little bit, but it was just a short, 10-yard out try. I think it was on a third down trying to get the stick. So give him a pass on that. And then again, I think as we'll touch on in a bit, that drive before halftime was tremendous, not only from a, play calling coaching perspective, but Brown was, tremendously composed under pressure, which is, what you want to see out of your quarterback here.
Yeah, just going back to that interception, you could just feel all the air being taken out of the bar right when that happened. This is our first impression of Brown. He threw it slightly behind Sweeney. It wasn't egregious, certainly, but it wasn't a great pass. I'm a Wade guy. You're a Wade guy. I hate to second guess Daz already out of the gate, but part of me was thinking, what's going to happen here? He's a freshman on the road.
I think a lot of our reason for wanting Wade is we said we want someone who's not going to give the game away. So certainly was disheartening, but obviously I think he bounced back from it pretty well. And just looking at the rest of the offense throughout the night, 339 total yards, very middle of the road compared to last year. I think it would have been sixth most if you put it in the game logs of last year, but much better on third down, which is not hard to do. We were 9 for 24, 38%. In the NCAA, that would have put us around 70 in the 2016 ranks, but we finished second to last year at 24%. So certainly a welcome change there. But I think the big news of the night, honestly, was the 92 plays that we put up. That's crazy high tempo for obviously BC standards, but just for general NCAA standards as well. Last year, for example, the highest tempo team was Baylor, and they averaged around 89 plays per game. So, we beat them, obviously, in the number one game in terms of tempo. Most we've had since joining the ACC in the past decade, we've only had five other games running over 80. And again, just to compare to last year, we ran 68 plays on average, which was almost a nice number, but just one play short, which would have been cool.
It's a fair point. Sometimes I question quality over quantity. I'm not that I'm complaining. It's much more watchable. Daz was complaining post game, and he wanted to hit that 100 play mark. He said if it wasn't for a couple three and outs in the fourth quarter, he would have hit it. But when you're averaging 3 yards a carry, they had fit in 50 carries, 148 yards. Hillman is just a complete bottleneck. There wasn't, Brown was okay in the passing game, but not enough to overwhelm that three-yard carry average. So I think it's good. I think it's almost, I don't know how well it's suited for this team.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll find out. Because you need a line that's going to be able to sort of batten down the hatches and be physical every play and hopefully that their conditioning is what it needs. But the line didn't impress me, and everything sort of stems off of that. So
yeah,
that's my concern.
I agree with you on the line. I think that, in the offseason, Daz kind of promised a more high-powered offense, and I will give him credit. He delivered in the sense that this was not just, dive, play-action pass, punt. So, it was a more exciting offense than definitely what we've been used to in the last 2 years. I'm not going to say it's Tyler Murphy level, but overall, I'm not going to complain about more fun football. Just a couple other notable performances I wanted to touch on here in the first game. Really impressed with Kobe White, Kobe Beef, six catches for 76 yards. He had that awesome, I think it was a 15-yard, leaping catch on that halftime drive. All the reports are out of camp were that he and Brown had awesome chemistry, and I think it definitely showed here. So he's one to watch where the freshman, pretty explosive. Michael Walker, still consistent, obviously the touchdown catch. Thad Smith was really the only explosive thing we had going in the backfield. He had 9 yards per carry. I think, like you said, Hillman was clearly the workhorse, but 3 yards per carry is...
Would you call him a workhorse?
He took, he took 50% of the carries, but, if you look at that 3 yards per carry, he had one breakout for 17. So if you eliminate that, he's talking, around 2 yards per carry. I'm not a math major, but we need him back in 2015 form.
Wow.
Like he looked against USC if we want to get to where we want our running game to get to.
I quite frankly think that, I don't know if it's an injury, I don't know if it's mental, I don't know what it is, but he's not the 2015 Hillman, and it's time. I'm ready for a change already. And that's just one, you can't read into one game, but I'm reading into one game plus all of last season. He's not the same guy he was when he was the ACC offensive freshman of the year, whatever
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, it would have been 2014, I'm sorry. Yeah, 2014. 2015, he was hurt, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and last year he was garbage. I don't know. They have other backs. It's time to test out, A.J. Dillon, see what he's got. He looked good in limited time. I think he had something like five carries, probably averaged 4 or 5 yards a carry. He was more effective than Hillman. A lot of this does go back to the offensive line. They frankly, they weren't ready for Northern Illinois, which makes me certainly concerned about our future opponents here.
Yeah.
Especially Wake Forest, but more on that later.
That's a teaser.
But overall, the passing game, thrilled with that. We haven't seen that in a long time since even the Reddick days, honestly, probably, and beyond. I think Brown's got all sorts of potential. Kobe White reached up and grabbed a great catch, converted a huge third down. Walker's got some speed. Love seeing Thad Smith back. He disappeared. I don't think he did anything last year after being their leading receiver in 2015 with about 70 yards.
Yeah, I don't think that's much of a challenge, but yeah,
but
someone had to do it.
Yeah, but it's a different Boston College identity than what we've seen in years past. You get some skill players, you get some people that can break open the game. It's just a matter of fine tuning that, and hopefully they'll build on sneaking out of there with a win. But tell you what, that end of first half touchdown drive. I mean, that's the story of the game. They don't win the game without
absolutely.
That. Probably. I mean. You have Daz, who is ultra-conservative, guy would kneel it down with 3 minutes to go. And I think a lot of it speaks to his faith in Brown. I don't think he does that with any other quarterbacks, certainly not with any of the ones on the roster currently. It was great to see. And give credit to Brown for leading that charge. It was you know, what, six or seven plays? I forget the
specifics. Yeah, six plays, 50 yards in just over a minute. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's awesome to have that weapon in our back pocket. There have been so many, you know, games in the past that I think as fans we've watched and said, you know, if they've gotten the ball down with 2 or 3 minutes, you said it's over, and we just, you know, had no confidence that they could do it. So seeing that we have this, you know, potentially in our back pocket, I think will, you know, at worst give us hope, and at best actually, you know, allow us to win some games. So
do you remember that stat they showed on the screen? I don't remember, but I remember it was ridiculous. So something like Coach Adazio is 0-41. It wasn't that big, but
yeah, it was
0-41 in games when trailing at halftime.
Yeah, he does not know how to.
It was almost like he saw that.
How to do that.
It's almost like he saw that. It was like, you know what? Let's air it out a little bit. So that was great to see.
If that's what it takes, I will. I'll not complain. So that was fun to watch. And I think on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, hold on. Let's take a quick inventory of some of your predictions from last episode.
We'll call them. You wrote these down. Okay.
Yeah, you're the cool's the four cold hard facts. We'll call them.
Sure.
All right. So Wade is starting and is my breakout dude for the year.
Wrong.
So that was wrong. If I can't pick Wade as my starting dude, Tommy Sweeney is my breakout dude.
Wrong.
So he had zero catches for 0 yards. He did get targeted on Brown's pick, so you can feel good about that. And this is my favorite. Yeah, I'm not worried about the line. We're 300 pounds plus. We're back to being O-line U.
Wrong.
Yeah, it was dead wrong.
Let me say this. If I had you know, 4 hours to re-listen to our show seven times, and I appreciate you for the lessons. I have a feeling there's some stuff I could grab from you on the cutting room floor as well, but we'll leave it at that for now. Oh, there's one more.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of this. You said the D will be what it is. That's a direct quote. I don't know what that means.
I think I stand by that.
I think it was a safe comment because I think you can't be wrong because it's just nonsense. But with that, why don't you dive into the defensive recap?
It is a nice segue. I think they were slightly underwhelming. I think they were not obviously what they were in 2015 or 2016, which, you know, I think was somewhat expected. Gave up 367 total yards to a MAC team, which outgained us, which is disappointing. But that's middle of the road compared to what we gave up last year. Again, that's disappointing coming from a MAC compared to, you know, full ACC schedule. Our third down D was tremendous. We were 2 for 15, 13%, which is, you know, obviously you can't extrapolate to a full season, but it's twice as good as what, you know, we put up as the number one third down D last year. We were around 26%. So that was impressive. I think we had one third down that we had a stupid penalty early on in the game that I think led to a touchdown, which is disappointing. But I would say overall it did feel like a disappointing showing from the D, especially the line. Zero sacks, zero hurries, only two tackles for loss. I mean, you know, where was Landry? Only three solo tackles, one pass deflection. I think we both thought coming into this game that our defensive line, if anything, was going to eat up a MAC offensive line, and that was just not even going to be an issue. But, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case.
You look at the stats for Northern Illinois. They averaged 4.7 yards per carry versus our 3.0. Some of that is inflated on that 60-yard ridiculous run that the quarterback had. More on that later. But you know, you look at the leading tacklers in this game, and it's Will Allen, it's Yiadom, it's Cam Moore. You know, your D-back shouldn't be leading the team in tackles in my mind, and I think that's a big reason why our guys didn't shut it down up front. You couldn't get pressure up the middle, and as a result, they were getting to that second, third level, which, again, you're playing Northern Illinois. We thought, you know, we predicted that both lines would overpower the opposing lines, and didn't happen on either side of the ball. So I'm certainly concerned. The front four in particular were quiet. Concerned about Max Richardson in the middle. You know, I did think Strahan played okay. He had that huge stop on fourth down in the fourth quarter, which was huge, but just very, very underwhelming overall from our defense, which is concerning going forward.
Yeah, I will say the one place where I will give, you know, some credit, and really just because I don't understand what this number means, but Pro Football Focus gave Landry a score of 94.88. He was the highest ranked ACC player of the weekend. Again, no idea what that means because he only had three solo tackles, one pass deflection, no sacks, no hurries, no tackles for loss. So no idea where that stat is coming from.
Is that like it has to be based on like somehow quantifying that they ran it away from him? Because otherwise,
I don't know how
you give him that number. But
I guess. And again, you know, I think we have obviously thrown the caveat out that we were in a loud bar and, you know, not necessarily in our best mental state. So for the sake of maybe there were some things going on that we missed, but not sure how they came up with it. Happy with it if that's how well you actually played. And I take some of my criticism back, but it is what it is. And the only other thing to add is just a nice pick by Lucas Dennis. Would like to see more turnovers out of that unit against, again, a MAC offense, like we've said, but hopefully those will come in time. My overall thoughts on the game, and I think you agree, but obviously chime in where you don't. I think it was just a very average performance on both sides of the ball. Both the yards gained and allowed were, you know, statistically average. A lot of potential in the offense. I like what I saw from Brown in the high tempo, but definitely not, you know, where we need to be competing at a high level in the ACC. And then obviously the D, I think, specifically the D line, we really need them to step up. So definitely some things to be excited about, but a lot, I think, that we need to work on, especially as we go into the ACC next week.
I think that looking at it overall, you have to be very pleased with the offense, despite the line play. We have a passing game for the first time in a long time. If you have any faith in the line, the running game, which I do, I think we have too much talent back there to just be, you know, kind of bottled up all season. I think that will come out eventually once they, you know, figure out the kinks, figure out what combination of offensive linemen work back there. Marcel Lazard, the West Virginia transfer, was brutal. They took him out in the second quarter, I think, and threw a sophomore in there. I mean, they got to figure it out, obviously, but pleased with the passing game. If you combine that passing game with the defense that this defense has the potential to be, we're going to win a lot of football games. If that defense is what it is, if that's our team, then we're in trouble because we're going to play a lot of close games because we can't. I mean, frankly, we're not going to win. We're not going to win the high scoring affairs that you see. And we'll see some high powered offenses here. Just looking at, you know, what Virginia Tech did and some of the other teams here. So special teams was great. Very happy with
that
so far.
Hang on, no spoiler. No, that's actually a really nice segue into.
You can't reserve. You can't reserve all of them.
I can. I have a couple. So this is my. Well, I have one. I have one dude of the week. Unless you want to get something in before I get to dude of the week.
No, just do it.
Okay. So my dude of the week, as Matt set up so nicely there, is Colton Lichtenberg. 3 for 3 on field goals, 32-yarder, 42-yarder, and the game winner from 37 with 2 minutes left. Also 2 for 2 on the extra points. Similar to having that, threat before the half. It's really nice to finally have, at least for one game, consistency in the kicking game. That's been something that we've been sorely lacking since the Iceman, Nate Freeze, left campus and just completely changes the way that we manage games. I mean, you saw it in Ireland last year where Daz was, you know, going for it on fourth down from the 20-yard line because he was afraid to let someone kick it. So due to the week, Colton Lichtenberg, for me,
did you see Daz's post-game presser? Someone asked him straight up, oh, hey, so you went with Lichtenberg on the field goals. Has he been, you know, just lights out in practice? Has he been consistent in practice? And Daz goes, no, actually, he's been very inconsistent in practice. So,
oh, that's good.
It's huge that, you know, we think it's a huge confidence boost. He said all the right things after that, but that's we'll see if this is just sort of a fluke or not.
Well, anyone who knows him, anyone who knows Colton, make sure you let him know that he's due to the week from this Matt. Maybe that'll help boost the confidence as well.
Only that he also ripped off my guy, Max, whatever the German's name is.
Schutz, little Goldston. Your breakout dude of the week. Do you want to talk about him?
The announcers were calling him Das Boot, which is just the misdirected nickname, but hey, whatever. Sure. Lichtenberg, yeah, is, sorry. You know, whatever. So my dude of the week is actually Scott Loeffler, which, yeah, you probably didn't see coming. He's the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I like it.
So give him all the credit in the world for first off, a lot of people were clamoring for Ryan Day to become the offensive coordinator. Loeffler is unproven. He's had ups and downs with Virginia Tech, Auburn, historically, whatever. Ryan Day was one of the names that has floated as, hey, maybe that BC can hire him down the road. Obviously, the former offensive coordinator under Spaz. If you guys were watching the Ohio State game, Ryan Day is not going to be the guy for us. He was just – and I nose pick is anonymous here, but he was just – he was going after it on television for a good 10 seconds before they cut away. So already Loeffler's playing with house money a little bit, as long as he doesn't do that. But on top of that, he really opened up the playbook, but without, you know, throwing caution to the wind. He's got a freshman quarterback in there that, you know, so he had the initial pick over the middle in tight coverage. He sort of adapted the playbook a little bit. He stuck with the short outs to the flat, sort of easy passes for Brown to take care of. And then even when, you know, it was clear that the offensive line wasn't doing a good job protecting and couldn't run the ball, he started to move Brown around in the pocket. And also, I don't know who to credit for this, whether it's Daz or Loeffler, but, you know, going 2 for 2 on fourth down and really, you know, being assertive about it, not even thinking, those are huge. Those are game-changing conversions they had. So, Scotty Loeffler, dude of the week. Let's keep it going.
All right, I like that pick. And I think with that, we move into everybody's favorite game, Dude or Pood, brought to you by the Cleveland Circle Chipotle, serving students neurovirus, specifically Dennis Clifford, a few times in the last few years. And if Chipotle, anyone from Chipotle Corporate is listening to us, please don't sue us for using your name as a sponsor here. My dude of the week is going to be, or not dude of the week, just my dude for Dude or Pood is going to be Friday night road games. I don't like them at home, but it's a lot of fun on a Friday night. You know, you're going out to a bar. You know, everyone's there. You're kind of excited for it all week. You wear the game day polo to work. And it, the best part is that it gives you a stress-free Saturday. Humble brag, I was, you know, sitting at a luxury box Yankees Red Sox on Saturday, free food, free drink, you know, just an awesome time. But even if you're sitting on your couch watching the full slate of college games, that's a phenomenal way to do it too. So don't like the Friday night games at home, but definitely a fan of them on the road.
My dude of the week is the dude of the week is Scott Loeffler.
Yeah,
the dude or Pood is having the names on the back of the jerseys. That's big time.
I like that one. That's
tell you what. We are not Notre Dame. We're not the Yankees. Let's throw the fucking names on the back of the jerseys. And I'll tell you what, that's all there is to it. It's nice having them there. You know who's making the tackles, who's, you know, just an absolute liability on the defensive side. What offensive linemen need to be benched. It's very helpful on the on the journalism side as well. But let's not try to be something that we're not, and quite frankly, I think is stupid. So
I tell you what, in a crowded bar, that just is everything that you need. That was a thrill to see the names back. So that's a very good dude from you there. My pood, and this is on me. I'll put my hand up for this. It's probably on you a little bit as well. My pood is drunk tweeting from the 4th and Dude Twitter account over the course of Friday night. I think, like you mentioned, we definitely had a few cocktails both before, during, and after the game. Probably got a little too fast and loose with the Twitter account. Overall, didn't harm us too much. We gained about 10 followers, but I'm going to put my hand up on that. I messed up. I apologize. I'm not going to say it won't happen again, but I will own that as my pood for this week.
I do just want to clarify that most of the bad tweets were yours. I had a couple a couple of gems. So something to think about going forward.
Okay.
Maybe I'm in control of the Twitter account.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk about
it. Gets after 9 p.m. or so.
Offline.
My pood is the ginger quarterback 60-yard run. Is he redhead? Feels like he's a redhead.
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah, okay. I tweeted about that, actually, so thanks for following.
Yeah, that's probably a great tweet. The 60-yard run he had to set up the first touchdown was an abomination. I didn't realize it until I rewatched the highlight. It was a play action. Your job as a defensive end, if you're Zach Allen, is to make sure that no one gets outside of you running the ball, right? And that's exactly what he did. He left a huge gap wide open in the middle. This guy wasn't even a dual threat. He shouldn't have been. He was that night, obviously. But I've never seen defensive line play that bad. You also had Strahan, who would drop back in coverage, and Yiadom that were seemingly blocking the receivers the wrong way. It was just a very interesting highlight. We'll send out the GIF because it's pretty entertaining. But, you know, that was the big momentum changer. Like I said, set up their first touchdown. So, you know, hopefully we can improve upon that. But yeah, that's due to Pood. Let's start talking about Wake.
All right. Awesome. So, again, I'll start it off like last week with a fun fact. I'll be honest, Wake, you know, they're a very peer school to us. I think both in, you know, academically and kind of a personality wise, I think that, you know, a lot of Wake students would fit in at BC and vice versa. So there's not a lot of uniqueness to them, like some, you know, state school in the Midwest, like Northern Illinois. So with that, I didn't find a lot of good stuff out of their fun facts. They're kind of vanilla. But I guess I'm going to officially enter as my fun fact of the week. They originally opened as Wake Forest Manual Labor Institute in 1834, which is just a tremendously catchy title, by the way, for 1834. Probably got a lot of students in on name alone there. But as part of being a student or staff at the Wake Forest Manual Labor Institute, they required students and staff to spend half of each day doing manual labor. Very interesting business model. I guess that's probably in lieu of spending $50,000, $60,000 a year. You could say that's a fair trade-off, doing half-day manual labor. But that, I guess, would be the funnest fact I have on Wake Forest.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that would never fly in this millennial economy that we have these days. But so that's a good one. Probably not as good as mine. It's Winston-Salem, so not affiliated with Wake. I couldn't find any Wake Forest fun facts. I searched really hard. I went to the second page of Google, to be honest. But Winston-Salem, North Carolina is the site where Krispy Kreme donuts were invented back in 1937. And just to bring it back to this millennium, in 2005, they were actually investigated for accounting fraud and had to restate nearly $30 million in revenues. So don't love that. They were engaged.
So you can see why that would pique your interest.
Yeah, so they had been doing some channel stuffing. If you want to give you a quick accounting lesson, it's basically It's basically sending products to customers that don't want them as a way to inflate your profits at the end of the quarter. It's highly illegal. But I'll tell you, it is legal in college football. Not that the BC defense knew that last
year. Real quick, couldn't you argue that we're technically channel stuffing by sending our podcast out to people who don't want to listen to it? Is that something we should be concerned about?
That sounds like a new segment to me, Matt.
Okay, shoot. Okay, well, we'll revisit that. We'll talk to our accountants. That was a fun fact. Again, an asterisk because it was Winston-Salem, not Wake Forest, but it is what it is. With that, let's roll into the notable alumni. This week we're going to do a starting five plus a six-man, just really so we get 3-3 and it's balanced. That's the only reason, and there's really nothing else that goes with six. So starting right, five plus six-man.
Let's do the snake draft. I'll go first.
Yep, snake draft. You go
first.
And
we'll see what happens.
Okay.
All right. Actually, I'll go first. No, let's choose the snake draft. Let's do it as we discussed. All right.
Yep.
Muggsy Bogues.
Okay, so you know that I normally don't like to go to basketball players or athletes in general,
he's
fine.
He's an actor.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
So Muggsy Bogues is the actor that everyone really enjoyed in Space Jam, really stole the performance, in my opinion, him and Sean Bradley. He did have a stint in the NBA. He's the shortest player of all time. But more importantly, he led the Charlotte Sting, which is a WNBA franchise, to a 14-30 record.
That's a good season.
Before the team folded in January of 2007. But he's a Deacon.
Okay. So I get two now. I'm going to go.
Yep.
My first one's going to be Lee Norris. He played Minkus on Boy Meets World.
Yes, that was on my list as well.
I think everyone loves Minkus. That's just an all-time character. And then I'm going to go my second, Arnold Palmer, with a third overall pick.
Too soon.
The greatest of all time.
Too soon.
Rest in peace. What else? They've produced actually a lot of golfers. None of them are on my list, so Arnold Palmer will kind of represent all of Wake Forest golf.
Yeah, I think they had Webb Simpson, a couple of the Haas brothers.
Webb Simpson, yep, exactly.
PGA guy over here. So you go again. Oh, no, you went twice.
No, I went twice.
Okay. So now I go now. So I have Eddie Timonis, who was he's a sports writer for USA Today, which isn't, that impressive. More impressively, he was the first ever contestant to appear on Jeopardy, and he was blind. So he won five straight, and get this, he won $69,000.
Oh, man.
And back in the days
of too good.
Back in the days of 1999, when you won five straight, you had to retire. So he retired a champ. And for USA Today, he actually is in charge of compiling the coaches' poll results. So when you see the BC after they beat Clemson week four and they're not ranked, you have him to blame. Cue those jokes.
So this is I don't know if this is insensitive, but it seems like it would not be the best disability for someone to have who's counting poll results. Is that just me, or? I'll back it up. Being blind, by the way, is in vogue now. Shout out to the USC long snappers. That's in the news. So five-time Jeopardy, getting on the notable alumni and snapping for USC. So congrats to those guys.
Well, when you're blind too, your other senses actually get better. So
true.
Maybe he's using his sense of smell to know that BC does not have what it takes to break the top 25. My next one is Richard Burr. There's another guy you probably hadn't heard of, but he's a senator of North Carolina. Anytime you enter the political sphere as a Burr, you're going to get tossed in the likes of Aaron Burr, who it turns out he's actually a direct descendant of.
Okay.
He refuted that claim. He said he thinks he's actually only a descendant of Aaron Burr's sister, or actually Aaron Burr's brother. However, historians say that Burr does not have a brother and only has a sister, so that story doesn't check out. So Dick Burr is number five on my alums there.
Oh, hey, a politician is lying. What else is new?
Nice one. Got him.
Stick to sports. Okay, so sixth man. I've got a couple good options here. I'm going to officially put my vote in for Maya Angelou is going to get my official vote for sixth man. I think that she fits the sixth man position as well, because I have to imagine she wouldn't be too much of a force on the court, wouldn't get too much playing time, but definitely be a good locker room presence, kind of get the boys fired up with some nice pros.
Okay, and just to jump in, I don't think she's actually an alum. So just
she's not. She's a faculty member, so I'm gonna count
Wake
that.
Forest alums.
Okay, if she's not allowed by the NCAA or whatever, I'll go with David Chase, the writer, director, and producer of The Sopranos. Keep it in the arts. But overall, a good alumni. I think it's a good alumni from Wake Forest. They have a guy worth $16.7 billion, which is pretty good. Brian Piccolo from Brian's Song, rest in peace.
Well, another one too soon. Wow, you're really on a tear today, Matt.
Yeah, Billy Packer, the CBS commentator, who I actually think I don't like. But overall, I got some good names. Definitely is not Northern Illinois.
Ken
so
Thomas,
overall,
who's the former CEO of Wachovia. If you know anything about Little League Baseball, when I was a youngster, our team was sponsored by Wachovia. We won the pitcher's coach championship. So Ken has lived a very accomplished life. So
all right, so I think I'm going to move on. Yeah, I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on to the tailgate ability ranking. So last week we did the travel ability rankings, which of course was ranking basically one out of five RVs of how worthy of a road trip it is to go on. We're going to change up the rules a little bit for the tailgate ability rankings, which is essentially going to be for home games. How worth it is it to go up and actually tailgate? How excited are you for it? So different score than the travelability rankings. We're going to go 1 out of 10, and the quantity is going to be 30 packs of Natty. So 1 out of 10, 30 packs of Natty.
Why don't we go 1 out of 30?
Okay, that makes more sense.
Let's go 1 out of 30, yeah.
Sure.
And by the way, I was aware of this rule change too.
Yeah,
why don't you go ahead? Because I'll tell you what I've written down, but why don't you go first?
Okay. So my reason for my score, it's going to be supposed to be high 60s and sunny. It's the home opener. It's the ACC opener. It's a winnable game. First day of beer and alumni, which I think will kind of have a little bit of a, everyone will be excited for that. And then the biggest reason I have is we're 1-0, and undefeated pregames are by far the best pregames. There's definitely a little bit of an air of excitement when you still have, 12-0 in front of you or a tremendous season in front of you versus when you're going late in the year and you're 3-6 and just kind of everyone's down and you're just there for the tailgate. There's definitely a little added excitement around the team. So with all that said, I'm going to go – I've got to do my math here because I was 7.6 out of 10, which would be 21
– carry the six.
22.8 out of 30.
Yeah, very good. You got it.
Okay.
All right, so what I have written down under the tailgate ability rankings is the hill in left field, which obviously doesn't exist at alumni, but Wake Forest, I did some research on the Wake Forest Stadium. They have a hill behind the one of the end zones, which I was just thinking that would be kind of cool, kind of unique, a way to make it seem like you actually have fans. You fill up that hill, you fill up, the other people on either sideline. I'm struggling here because this doesn't.
I think you misunderstood the assignment, Matt.
Right, right.
The question is out of 30,
welcome,
out of 30
welcome
beers,
to my undergrad life.
Out of 30 beers, how excited would you be to tailgate on Saturday?
Yeah, so I had the hill in left field. So I'm going to go, if I convert that into math, I'm going to go, it's Wake Forest. I think you're pretty close. I think that because we're undefeated and we're not undefeated that often, I'm going to bump it up to about 24. I'm going to go 24.5. Cold ones out of the 30.
All right, I love it. So with that, we'll do the final 10 minutes here. We'll jump into, some actual football talk, kind of specifically how we match up, what to watch for, and then ultimately our predictions. I'll just kind of start with some of the high-level numbers. I know, Matt, you'll get a little bit more into the details here. So Wake Forest, what did they do last week? They're 1-0. They beat Presbyterian, which is an FCS school, 51-7. So, obviously, it's a big number, but you don't want to get too worked up. It is an FCS school. They have a strong defense. Bill Connolly, who's one of this big stats guys, ranked them as the 22nd best defense in the country. Caveat there is that Bill Connolly also projected NIU to beat us last week. So suck some ass, Bill Connolly. You're wrong. I believe you're wrong with the defense. Their star to watch on the defense, at least, is Duke. I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but Duke Egeofor.
Just call him Okafor. I'm going to call him
Duke
Okafor.
Duke Okafor had 10.5 sacks last year. That's a little concerning after what we saw out of our line last week, especially with the rumor of the John Baker injury. I don't know where that stands, but that would be no bueno if we had a 260-pound freshman in a center against their line. Their offense kind of has two QBs. John Wolford is a starter brother of former BC fullback Bobby Wolford. Both had nice days against Presbyterian, Presbyterian.
And John Wolford's entering his 14th year of eligibility.
Yeah, he's been there for a while. He's like a Pitt basketball player. They just kind of go for 20 years and they have to leave.
I'll tell you what, since 06, and Wake Forest is famous for this, they've only had two quarterbacks since 2006. That's 11 years. They had Wolford, and then Riley Skinner before him also had I think eight years of eligibility. So
yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, good on them for longevity.
And then the only other thing I'll say what to watch for before Tim, we let you dive in here is I'm excited to see about Beeren alumni. We're not going to the game, but I'm interested to see from a fan's perspective and just kind of hearing on Twitter what the effect is going to have on atmosphere and attendance. And I'm also excited to learn about, or excited slash nervous to learn about what it's going to be for price, locations, how many stations, what the lines are going to be like, et cetera. My guess is that we're going to go $6 for a domestic, and there's only going to be about three stations on the bottom floor, and they're all going to be as far away from the student or young alumni section as possible, which is unfortunate, but interesting to see how that's all going to shape up first week.
Yeah, should be interesting. Are we? I think we're heading back to Dewey's. I think they had a good enough show. We're probably gonna, for the New York crew, we're probably gonna head back to
yeah,
to
I think
Dewey's
that's
on
definitely
Saturday
the right
morning. But yeah, no, it should be interesting. Interested to hear anyone that is going to the game how the tailgating and the beers and all that fit in.
Yeah, shoot us a tweet. Shoot us a tweet at fourthanddude, fourthanddude@twitter.com. If you happen to be up there and have any insight on how that all looks.
So Wake is obviously in the ACC Atlantic. So we play them every year. We had that ugly 3-0 defeat 2015, and we're not going to talk about last year's game. Is probably a better representation of where both teams are at this year. BC ended up winning 17-14 in a game that I don't really think we had much business winning. You know, we trailed 14-10 until Sweeney had a big touchdown reception with 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But they absolutely kicked our ass as far as, you know, offense goes. They doubled us on rushing yards, pretty much did the same on receiving. If it wasn't for Landry, who had three sacks, four and a half tackles for a loss, as well as a tip ball that resulted in a pick in Wake territory, as well as Miles Willis, who forced a fumble on a punt return and then converted that into a touchdown.
By the way, just a quick shout out to Miles Willis. I think that guy is not from a necessarily talent perspective, just an all-time Eagle. I just absolutely love BC in and out from literally the minute he committed, like fall semester of his junior year. The guy was just tweeting nonstop about BC, recruiting other people to come BC. So shout out to Miles Willis. Honorary dude of the week. Can we do that? I don't know. It's a little retroactive, but
yeah, I'll allow it. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
But you know, when you look at this game last year, you don't want to read too much into it. But at the same time, I mean, they retained a lot of their players from both sides of the ball. We're a different team, but, you know, I didn't love what we saw last week. So maybe we're not that different, you know, net wise. But they dominated last year. We have to play a lot better. Hillman last year had six carries for 8 yards. So that bodes well. You know, based on what we've seen from him, they do have Duke Okafor. And it's also this other guy, Zeke Rodney. You know, kind of plugging up the middle there. So I'm hopeful that Loeffler, you know, has another creative type of playbook in mind here. Otherwise, we might be in trouble. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the passing attack needs to be what we want the passing attack to be. But I ultimately think it's going to come down to what happens in the trenches. I think that, you know, and not even just from a run perspective, but if our line can't get any push at all, and Brown has to throw it every, you know, half a second, we're going to be in for a long night. So we, at a minimum, need protection, and in a perfect world, we get some push in the run game, and then vice versa on the defensive side. Obviously, Wolford's experience has been there for a while, but we have to get pressure.
And both of these guys are mobile QBs. We need to spy a quarterback at some point. I think it's going to happen. I mean, we have to stop letting the mobile quarterbacks, you know, take advantage of us for, you know, 40 yard carries at a time. It's a complete momentum changer. So my hope is that whoever's calling the shots at the defensive end, whether it's Jim Reed or it's Paul P, someone figures it out. We cannot lose the game on the defensive side of the ball against someone like this. One other player to watch is their tight end. I forget his name, actually.
Not going to work here anymore.
He's kind of a beast over the middle. Like, he had a TD or two in their first game. It's Presbyterian, but he also had a TD against us last year. So someone's got to keep an eye on him as well. So I'll give you my prediction. I think it's going to be really close. I don't have a great feeling about it. My score is 17-16. BC pulls it out with probably there's a safety thrown in there somewhere. It's going to be a tight game. It's going to be a defensive game with a couple of big plays that break out, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think we're off the same page. I don't have a great feeling, but having said that, we are on the road to 10-2, and I don't really see how we get there without beating Wake Forest. So very similar score. I'm going 17-13. I think it, you know, like I said, I think it all comes down to the O-line. They, again, at a minimum, need to give Brown some time back there to do what he can do and you know, keep the defense off the field. And, you know, hopefully we get a little home field advantage, a little home cooking, obviously Friday night and going out to a chilly Northern Illinois is probably a little different game routine than what the boys are used to. So hopefully this will be a sense of normalcy. ACC play, obviously we've been very competitive, you know, with Wake Forest over the past couple of years. So hopefully that continues. 17-13 is my number. Get 2-0 going into Notre Dame, which is sure to be an exciting week one way or the other.
One week at a time.
From a
gambling standpoint, I'm not touching this one. I think BC's favored by a couple points, which I'm not taking that. I will take the under. I accidentally took the over last week. Had a couple cold ones when I was deciding which side I was going to take. Meant to take the under. Missed the button. Took the over. Going to try to regroup this week.
Probably did not work out so well for you.
No, I didn't. Yeah. No, it didn't work out. So, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, go Eagles, but you know, after last week, you can only be as optimistic as the offensive line allows you to be. So we'll see here.
Definitely. So I think that about wraps it up. Again, obviously, a good week. 1-0 is better than 0-1. We are undefeated. That's a nice feeling to have. And I think we're you know, feeling excited about going into next week. So hopefully everyone enjoyed it. Like always, send us your feedback to Fourth and Dude. Check out the site, fourthanddude.blogspot.com. They are our title sponsor. So be sure to check them out. Give them some page views. Definitely a lot of good contact over the course of the week. And thanks for listening, and go Eagles.
And it's always a great day to be a dude.
What are we doing now? We're breaking it down.